Welcome to the Tupelo Music Hall in White River Junction, Vermont. I'm Kate McNally, host of The Folk Show on New Hampshire Public Radio. We're glad you're here. Thank you so much. Thank you. We are so glad you're here for the Tupelo Public Radio Project. For the next hour, I'll be your host as we explore acoustic music with some of the most talented and accomplished musicians performing today. Tonight, our guest is Suzanne Vega. Suzanne Vega emerged as a leading figure of the folk music revival of the early 1980s when, accompanying herself on acoustic guitar, she sang what has been labeled contemporary folk or neo-folk songs of her own creation in Greenwich Village clubs. Since the release of her self-titled, critically acclaimed 1985 debut album, she's given sold-out concerts in many of the world's best-known halls. The masterful storyteller was born in Santa Monica, California, but grew up in Spanish Harlem and the Upper West Side of New York City. She was influenced by her mother, a computer systems analyst, and her stepfather, a writer, who provided a home full of multicultural music, Motown, bossa nova, jazz, and folk were the soundtrack for Vega's upbringing. At age 11, she picked up a guitar, and as a teenager, she started to write songs. She studied dance at the High School for the Performing Arts and later attended Barnard College, where she majored in English literature. It was in 1979 when Suzanne attended a concert by Lou Reed and began to find her true artistic voice and distinctive vision for contemporary folk. Receptionist by day, Suzanne was hanging out at the Greenwich Village Songwriters Exchange by night. Soon, she was playing iconic venues like The Bottom Line and Folk City, and the world caught on. With 9 albums and many collaborations and awards later, folks, please give a great Tupelo welcome to Suzanne Vega.
Thank you very much. Well, thanks. That was great. I enjoyed that. I was backstage going, yes, that's right, that's true. My mother is a computer systems analyst, and there we go.
Even if I am in love with you, all this to say, what's it to you? Observe the blood, the rose tattoo of the fingerprints on me from you. Other evidence has shown that you and I are still alone. We skirt around the danger zone and don't talk about it later. Marlena watches from the wall, her mocking smile says it all. She records the rise and fall of every soldier passing. The only soldier now is me. I'm fighting things I cannot see. I think it's called my destiny that I am changing. Marlena on the wall. Well, I walked to your house in the afternoon by the butcher shop with the sawdust strewn. Don't give away the goods too soon is what she might have told me. And I tried so hard to resist when you held me in your handsome fist and reminded me of the night we kissed and of why I should be leaving. Marlena watches from the wall, her mocking smile says it all. She records the rise and fall of every soldier passing. The only soldier now is me, I'm fighting things I cannot see. I think it's called my destiny that I am changing. Marlena on the wall. Thank you. best to say, what's it to you? Observe the blood, the rose tattoo of the fingerprints on me from you. Other evidence has shown that you and I are still alone. We skirt around the danger zone and don't talk about it later. I tried so hard to resist when you held me in your handsome fist and reminded me of the night we kissed and of why I should be leaving. Marlena watches from the wall. Her mocking smile says it all. She records the rise and fall of every man who's been here. But the only one here now is me. I'm fighting things I cannot see. I think it's called my destiny that I am changing, 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 changing. Marlena watches from the wall. Her mocking smile says it all. She records the rise and fall of every soldier passing. The only soldier now is me. I'm fighting things I cannot see. I think it's called my destiny that I am changing. Marlena on the wall.
Thanks.
When heroes go down, they go down fast. So don't expect any time to equivocate the past. When heroes go down, they land in flame. So don't expect any slow and careful settling of blame. I heard you say you look out for the feet of clay that someone will be falling next. Without the chance for last respect, you feel the disappointment. When heroes go down, man or woman reveal. Do you show any kind of mercy on the battlefield? I heard you say you look out for the feet of clay that someone will be falling next. Without the chance for last respect, you feel the disappointment. When heroes go down, man or woman reveal. You can't expect any kind of mercy on the battlefield. When heroes go down, when heroes go down, when heroes go down.
Thanks very much. Very nice to see you. I wanted to tell you that one thing I've done recently in the last 4 years, I guess, is I've started my own record label. And I've been re-releasing a lot of my older songs on my own label. And I decided to, rather than re-record each record one at a time, I thought I'd group them all together by themes. So last year we had Volume 1, and that's all the love songs put together in one place. And I've had a few lively discussions with journalists who want to challenge me on my notion of what is love, what is a song. I feel that they're love songs. They're unusual, you know. They're not your Barry Manilow love songs. Nothing against him, but these are quite different. So I'd like to do a couple of those interesting love songs now. Yeah.
Today I am a small blue thing, like a marble or an eye, with my knees against my mouth. I am perfectly round. I am watching you. I am cold against your skin. You are perfectly reflected. I am lost inside your pocket. I am lost against your fingers. I am falling down the stairs. I am skipping on the sidewalk. I am thrown against the sky. I am raining down in pieces. I am scattering like light, scattering like light, scattering. Today I am a small blue thing, made of china, made of glass. I am cool and smooth and curious. I never blink. I am turning in your hand, turning in. Against your skin, you are perfectly reflected. I am lost inside your pocket. I am lost against your fingers. I am falling down the stairs. I am skipping on the sidewalk. I am thrown against the sky. I am raining down in pieces. I am scattering like light, scattering like light, scattering like light. Today I am a small blue thing, made of china, made of glass. I am cool and smooth and curious. I never blink. I am turning in your hand, turning in your hand, turning in your hand. Small blue thing, turning in your hand.
Thanks.
It won't do to dream of caramel, to think of cinnamon and long for you. It won't do to stir a deep desire, to fan a hidden fire that can never burn true. I know your name, I know your skin. I know the way these things begin, but I don't know how I would live with myself, what I'd forgive of myself if you don't go. So goodbye, sweet appetite. No single bite could satisfy. I know your name, I know your skin, I know the way these things begin, but I don't know how I would live with myself, what I would give of myself if you don't go. It won't do to dream of caring, to think of cinnamon and long for you.
This is the Tupelo Public Radio Project. I'm Kate McNally from New Hampshire Public Radio, and we're at the Tupelo Music Hall in White River Junction, Vermont, with Suzanne Vega. Suzanne is the mother of a daughter named Ruby. She's 17, and she's also the mother of the MP3. Surprise!
Surprise!
Suzanne, can you tell us a little bit about how that birthing came to pass?
Well, it came to pass without me, actually, without my actually being there. I was as surprised as anybody else to find out, I think 10 years after the occasion. The MP3 was created by a man named Karl-Heinz Brandenburg, and he was working in the Fraunhofer Institute on what would become the MP3, and he thought he had finished it, and suddenly someone was playing Tom's Diner down the hallway, the a cappella version, and he said to himself, if this MP3 is really finished, I can run that warm human voice through this device and it will recreate it faithfully. What happened was he got a copy of the recording, he ran it through the device, and it sounded really terrible. It had a lot of distortions on it, sounded a bit like Linda Blair from The Exorcist. I know, because he played it for me. He played what it sounded like before they refined it. So over the course of a few months, they kept running the song through the MP3, and eventually, when they could recreate that song more or less faithfully, they felt that they had finished it. So there was some journalist somewhere who said, so every MP3 that we hear is the result of Karl-Heinz Brandenburg's ears and Suzanne Vega's voice, making me, I guess, the mother.
Works for
Thank
me.
You. Thank you.
So then you kind of made it full circle when you were invited to the Thomas Edison National Park when they did a wax recording.
A wax recording. Yeah, last Friday, about a week ago, and it was amazing, actually, the whole thing. We recorded it the old-fashioned way, and they played it back on a gramophone, and it really sounded like it was happening, but it sounded as though my voice were coming back from 100 years ago.
It did. It really did. I listened to it and watched in amazement as you sang into this big, it looked like a cornucopia, but it was huge.
Yeah, it was huge. And so then the force of the voice presses down on the wax, on the needle, which makes an etching in the wax, and then you take that cylinder and you can recreate it.
So the mother of the MP3 goes back in time.
I like that, time travel. And then as I get older, I could send my avatar to do those things that I can't do myself. I'm looking forward to that.
Well, you've done a lot of, you know, speaking of avatars, you've done a lot with the new technology. And one of the things I found interesting was your work with the PodSafe technology. Can you describe for our audience what that means, actually, to do PodSafe work?
No, I can't really. how I came to do that pod technology was I was invited by a couple who came to my show. And so, you know, and the thing is, you surprised me because that happened a few years ago. And I have sort of forgot about it in the meantime. I did a song called Pornographer's Dream, and that did very well in that pod world. I guess it was number one for a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm, it was.
Yeah.
In 2007, number one on the PodSafe chart.
Right, so that was 5 years ago. So I but I know it did well, and I was happy
it
to do
did.
It. And I like to embrace as much technology as I can. I wouldn't say I'm great at it. I've destroyed a few of my handheld devices in fits of frustration and rage. But we don't need to talk about that. but as you said before, my mother's a computer systems analyst, so I grew up with technology in our house, as well as the acoustic guitar and all the other artistic things that we had. So
that's Suzanne Vega. She's no technophobe.
That's right.
Well, you've dabbled in dancing, producing, interviewing folks, also doing some stage work. What's going on with that?
Well, I minored in theater at Barnard College, and I actually studied dance for 10 years. That was what I was going to be when I was young. I studied the Martha Graham technique, and that's what I wanted to be, was a Martha Graham dancer. But then when I was about 17, I switched over. So I was very happy last year to revisit that theater world, and I finished a play, and it was a play based on the life and work of Carson McCullers. So I think a little bit later on we'll do a little mini set of songs from that that show, and the music was composed by Duncan Sheik, and it's all stories and about her life and work.
Do you want to introduce the person that you brought along with you tonight?
I sure do. This is Jerry Leonard on guitar. All those interesting sounds that you folks at home are hearing, it's all coming out of one man. And they're not pre-recorded tracks. There were a couple of kids last night at the show who were arguing about whether it was pre-recorded tracks or whether it actually was Jerry playing everything. It's Jerry playing everything. So I'd like to play a song right now called Frank and Ava, which is off the last album called Beauty and Crime. It's about Frank Sinatra and Ava Gardner. It's not really a love song. It's not on the Love Songs collection. It's it's about their marriage, and it's about their divorce, and then it's about the love affair that lasted until the end of their lives. So I tried to get it all in one song of 3 minutes. I think we got the main bits. It's a not enough to be in love song. On the way to the B-Day is when the trouble used to start. It didn't mean she wasn't queen of the tinderbox that was his heart of fire. His desire meant that everything must come undone. And so now we know that it's not enough to be in love. He's so true, she is too. She says, I love you, Frank, and then they drank all night. What a fight. He says, it isn't me you're thinking of. She's cool, makes him cruel, and they needle till the jewels go raining down upon the ground. She says, it's not enough to be in love.
Not enough to be in love.
Not enough to be
in love. Not enough to be in love.
Not
They woke up, they broke up. They were so volatile, and all the while life passed, and it went fast. And yet they never could forget the chemistry like you and me. It proved to keep them both apart for life. And so now we know that it's not enough to be in love.
Not enough to be in love. It's not enough to be in love.
Not enough to be in love.
Thanks. So now I'll do one of the very first love songs I ever wrote. This was written the summer I turned 18 years old. I was a disco dance and folk singing counselor at a sleepaway camp in the Adirondack Mountains. It was a really good job for me that summer. I had a variety of jobs, and receptionist, as you heard, was one, and this was another one. So this was written for the arts and crafts counselor of the boys' camp up the road. And I knew that at the end of the summer that I would be going home to New York City, and he would be going home to England. And it seemed terribly tragic, you know, as it does. I did not foresee that there, later on in the future, there would be the internet and email, and we would be emailing each other like all these years later, which actually we do email each other a couple times a month these days. But I didn't know that that was going to happen. So I wrote the song as a kind of a gift. And he, in return, gave me his bandana. You come from far away, pictures in your eyes of coffee shops and morning streets and the blue and silent sunrise. But night is the cathedral where we recognize the sign. We strangers know each other now as part of the whole design. Oh, hold me like a baby that will fall asleep. Curl me up inside you and let me hear you through the heat. Oh, you're the jester of this courtyard with a smile like a girl's, distracted by the women with the dimples and the curls, by the pretty and the mischievous, by the timid and the blessed, by the blowing skirts of ladies who promise to gather you to their breast. Oh, hold me like a baby that will not fall asleep. Curl me up inside you and let me hear you through the heat. Oh, you have hands of rain and water and that earring in your ear. The wisdom on your face denies the number of your years. With the fingers of the potter and the laughing tail of the fool, the arranger of disorder, with your strange and simple rules. Yeah, now I've met me another spinner of strange and gauzy threads, with a long and slender body and a bump upon the head. Oh, hold me like a baby that will not fall asleep. Curl me up inside you and let me hear you through the heat. Oh,
with a long and slender body and the sweetest, softest hands, and we'll blow away forever soon and go on to different lands. Please do not ever look for me, but with me you will stay. And you will hear yourself in song blowing by one day. But now hold me like a baby that will not fall asleep. Curl me up inside you and let me hear you through the heat.
This is the Tupelo Public Radio Project. I'm Kate McNally from New Hampshire Public Radio, and we're at the Tupelo Music Hall in White River Junction, Vermont, with Suzanne Vega. Sounds so sweet, so very nice.
Thank you.
Isn't it just fabulous? Isn't it great? Wow. What a treat this is. You know, Suzanne, we have a lot of Bill Morrissey and Leonard Cohen fans in our audience. And I know you've had a chance to work with them both. You appeared on the Bill Morrissey album Inside. And I read an interview you did with Leonard Cohen in the 90s, and it was kind of hard to tell who was interviewing who. But I'm wondering what you learned from these great songwriters that has influenced you and the way you look at the songwriting craft.
Well, I have to say that Bill Morrissey and I were friends, and from way back, from before I had my first record deal or anything, he was a really good friend to me, and he helped me get my first gig at Passim, which was very hard to get back then. Bob Donlan told me to join the line of people waiting, and Bill Morrissey put in a word for me. So I hung out with Bill for much of my life. And he was not just a good songwriter, but a terrific writer. He really had an eye for detail, for people, for character. And he had just a beautiful way with melody, very simple in some respects, but he had that novelist writer's eye, which I really love. That's kind of what set him apart, and his humor also. Now, Leonard Cohen was a whole other thing. I mean, I idolized Leonard Cohen from the time I was 14 years old and bought that first album, and suddenly I felt as though I'd made a great and dear friend. So when I actually did get to speak to him and talk to him, it was kind of amazing. So that interview is sort of up on the internet in all different forms. And it was him actually interviewing me, but I ended up trying to avoid a few questions that he kept putting to me. If you read the interview, it has a funny sort of dynamic.
It really does.
Yeah.
And you can find that on Suzanne's website. There's a lot of really great material on the web. So if you don't hear it here tonight, go check it out.
Yeah. SuzanneVega.com.
It's easy enough, right?
Yes, you can also get the close-up series. The series I've been talking about, you can get it there or on Amazon or on iTunes.
So what's next for you, Suzanne?
Well, a bunch of things. I'm rewriting the Carson McCullers play. I've been really happy with the songs, but I'm rewriting the book, so I hope that will come out later on this year. I've started work on some new albums, new songs first. Songs come before the albums. So that's what's on my... I'm finishing up the close-up series, finishing the play, and then working on new material.
Have you pretty much decided what you want to be when you grow up?
No, but what I love is that I love the world of technology, because I was sort of kidding before when I said that about the avatar. I did this little stint in Second Life where I had to create an avatar for myself, and I thought that's really perfect. You know, if I ever get to the point where I can't tour, I will just give concerts from my home on my own TV channel or something. You know, the future is sort of wide open from here. So no, I have not yet decided. Thank you for asking.
How about introducing the next tunes that you're going to play for us?
Yes, I'd like to do a little mini set now of the songs from the Carson McCullers play. This first song I'm going to do is called New York is My Destination, and Carson McCullers grew up and was born in Columbus, Georgia, the Deep South. She wrote The Heart is a Lonely Hunter and The Ballad of the Sad Cafe. And her dream was to go to New York City and become a famous and wealthy author. And that's just about exactly what happened. She hit New York at the age of 22 and became a celebrity almost immediately. That first book of hers, The Heart is a Lonely Hunter, became a huge success right away. So this song is from the point of view of her as a young girl dreaming about going to New York, and she has this fantasy that all of New York is waiting for her, which is kind of what happened. New York is my destination. New York is where I will be from. New York is made for grander things just like me. I will lunch at the Algonquin, swing by the plaza, waltz on in the Three Arts Club. I'll live there indefinitely, 'cause New York is made for grander things just like me. Literati, yes, they will love me. Paparazzi, well, could this be? Glitterati, well, they know of me. New York's waiting for me. All of the tales of seduction glittering on the horizon, mountains of fame and fortune and snow finally. 'Cause New York is made for grander things just like me. Literati, yes, they will love me. Paparazzi, well, could this be? Glitterati, well, they know of me. New York's waiting for me. Practice at the Parnassus, cram for Columbia classes, ride those Fifth Avenue buses, weave some tale about us. I lost all my money for Juilliard. I hid in the phone booth at Macy's. I slept in a brothel on the way to my destiny. 'Cause New York is made for grander things just like me. Literati, yes, they will love me. Paparazzi, well, could this be? Glitterati, well, they know of me. New York's waiting for me. And New York is made for grander things just like me. Thanks. The second song is called Anne Marie, and I have to say that Carson McCullers had a very interesting private life. She married her husband, Reeves McCullers, at a very young age. She married him at 19, and I think by 25 they were divorced, and then they remarried. But this did not prevent either one of them from having many love affairs with people of all sexes. So this is a song written for Anne Marie Clarock Schwarzenbach, who was one of the great loves of Carson McCullers' life. I saw your face, I knew you'd haunt me for all of my life. Rising above me, if you could want me, I'd be no man's wife. Everyone
sees you, everyone knows you. How can I possibly compare? Who could attain you with all of your pain? Who could possibly hold one so fair? Terror, pity, love, Anne Marie. Brilliant, stormy, her perfect beauty. She moves through the world with money, family. She glitters with trouble. She's that kind of girl. Everyone loves you, everyone wants you. How can I possibly compete? Who could explain you with all of your pain? Who could possibly make you complete? Terror, pity, love, Anne Marie. If I could see God, His face would be sacred like yours. God's face is hidden, and your face is suddenly all I can see. Everyone worships you, everyone needs you. How can I possibly complain? Who could contain you with all of your pain? Could I gather up all that you remain? Terror, pity, love, Anne Marie.
Thanks. This song is called Harper Lee, and Harper Lee, as you may know, is the author of the famous book To Kill a Mockingbird. And like Carson McCullers, she came from the Deep South. She was a young girl writing about social issues of her day. Her book came out about 20 years after The Heart is a Lonely Hunter, got huge acclaim, still does today. So you can imagine that Carson McCullers had a few feelings about Harper Lee, and not just about Harper Lee, but about every other writer of her generation. And there were a lot of writers, and she had a lot of feelings. And this song is called Harper Lee.
Virginia Woolf, she leaves me cold. I recognize the genius, but I'm twice as bold. I have more to say than Hemingway. Lord knows, compared to Faulkner, I say it in a better way. Graham Greene, he loves me. He loves my poetic sensibility. Catherine Ann Porter might be the best one now, but in about a year, I'm gonna show her how. Yes, I will. I said to Reeves the other day, Proust really is the man who comforts me in a way no other writer can. The timeless quality of the work, the length is very long. Believe me, Marcel Proust goes on and on and on and on for 7 volumes. Now Harper, Harper, Lee, Lee, Lee. She only wrote the one book. I've written more than 3. Darling Tennessee Williams, it's anybody's guess why a streetcar made millions and wedding so much less.
You know, I still am pondering that one. Harper, 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 Lee, Lee, Lee. Why do they always compare her to me, to me? Won't even talk about Eudora Welty. As for F. Scott, my sad cafe's greater than his Gatsby. I'm just telling you what someone told me they read, 'cause I never look at my reviews. They might give me a big head. Now Truman Capote was hypnotized, mesmerized, 'cause he realized that I knew that he knew that he had plagiarized my cadences. Imagine his surprise. You'll see it in his eyes when I win that Nobel Prize. Oh, thank you. Thank you so very much. Harper, 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 Lee, Lee, Lee. Why do they always compare her to me, to me? She always seems to be receiving more than she deserves. Honey, she's poaching on my literary preserves. Yes, from Harper Lee we have seen and we've heard, and I'd like to kill more than just that mockingbird. Well, you know, sometimes I really would. So you just wait until next year. Thank you so much. I'd like to thank Jerry Leonard on guitar. I'd like to thank Phil Sullivan on sound and everything else. I'd like to invite you to join my Facebook page, because then you can find out about when Close Up Volume 4 is coming out, if you're interested in that. That's going to be Songs of Family. And the next time Carson McCullers' play goes up will be in the fall. So you can find out that. You can find out all kinds of, you know, interesting information. And I can find out about you, like, when is your birthday? That's cool. Today is the birthday, actually, of a little girl whose name is Luca. And she's here, so we want to say happy birthday to Luca. So, thank you. Luca, I live on the second floor. I live upstairs from you. Yes, I think you've seen me before. If you hear something late at night, some kind of trouble, some kind of fight, just don't ask me what it was. Just don't ask me what it was. Just don't ask me what it was. I think it's 'cause I'm clumsy. I try not to talk too loud. Maybe it's because I'm crazy. I try not to act too proud. They only hit until you cry. After that, you don't ask why. You just don't argue anymore. Just don't argue anymore. Just don't argue anymore. Yes, I think I'm okay. I walked into the door again.
Well, if you ask, that's what I'll say. It's not your business anyway. I guess I'd like to be alone, with nothing broken, nothing thrown. Just don't ask me how I am. Just don't ask me how I am. Just don't ask me how I am. My name is Luca. I live on the second floor. I live upstairs from you. Yes, I think you've seen me before. If you hear something late at night, some kind of trouble, some kind of fate, just don't ask me what it was. Just don't ask me what it was. Just don't ask me what it was. They only hit until you cry. After that, you don't ask why. Just don't argue anymore. Just don't argue anymore. Just don't argue anymore. days, rain it will continue through the morning as I'm listening to the bells of the cathedral. I am thinking of your voice and of the midnight picnic once upon a time before the rain began. And I finish up my coffee and it's time to catch the train. Thank you.
Suzanne Vega, you've been listening to the Tupelo Public Radio Project, a joint project of New Hampshire Public Radio and the Tupelo Music Hall. I'm Kate McNally, host of the Folk Show on New Hampshire Public Radio. Thanks for joining us tonight. You can find out more information about this series on the Folk Show page of nhpr.org. Special thanks to Suzanne Vega.